Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
Doing great, Jim. We're closer to the first kickoff of the year, so things are rolling right along. August is moving fast.
It is. We're already past the midway point. We're past the midway point of fall camp for the teams. Penn State had their first scrimmage over the weekend. We start getting all the news coming out of training camp. And I know you're a Purdue guy, so your football circumstances are a little different. But I'm curious, it's now that point where everyone is enthusiastic about their team, optimistic. Everybody's undefeated, as they say. And I know Purdue, I try to use the analogy always, it's analogous to Penn State basketball, okay? You kind of know what the reality is. But I'm curious, how did those reports come out of camp? Are they super optimistic? Is everybody a star in the making on the team?
I mean, that's always how it is, right? Everything's going well. There've been very few turnovers, a lot of touchdowns, this, that, and the other. It's always hard to kind of decipher. I will say that I think that there is at least a little bit of honesty. You know, there's been conversations about the starting offensive line, and we kind of thought that was fixed. And now we learned that there's probably two or three spots that are up for grabs. The backup quarterback battle, they don't really have a clear second string just yet. So there's been at least some level of honesty there where it's like, you know, I feel like they talk about how always the competition is so, you know, it's so tight and anybody could win this job and that job. But I feel like at least the Purdue guys are a little bit more realistic with what's happening out there. Maybe I'm, and you know, I don't listen to position coaches at other schools, so maybe this isn't just a Purdue thing, but you don't really find any coaches that say we had a terrible fall camp. We were awful.
Well, it's one of my theories that you've got to figure out the coach speak of the particular coach. If Joe Paterno for many years, if a reporter would ask him about the presumed starting quarterback, how's he looking, you'd get, this backup, you gotta, you know, think about him. He's doing well. No, you don't. That's what Paterno's going to say. He would support especially his veterans. If, you know, this superstar freshman's coming in, he's got so much to learn compared to the senior. Well, you know, two games in, the freshman would take over the position. But you knew how to interpret that. With James Franklin, it was, of course, optimistic, positive about any player. So it always killed me when a reporter who had a player from his hometown, the local boy, how's he doing? Now, he could be the fifth string left guard, and you'll still get a positive spin, and this writer could write a positive article about him that makes him look like a star. Yeah. What you had to look out for is whenever James would bring up a player on his own. He wasn't asked about him. He might be asked about this left tackle, but if he'd talk about the right tackle, pay attention to that guy, okay? Sure. It's just the way you interpret it. Do you find that the same way with coaches? It takes like a year or so to figure out what they really mean.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. It's been hard to kind of dissect. So like it was almost year zero for us in the media scrum too last year with Barry Odom, because I said this last time, the lipstick on a pig thing. Like he had to try to do that because I think he knew before the season started. I think he was optimistic in the spring when he was first hired, but then everybody hit the transfer portal in that second window. And I think he kind of knew like we're not where we need to be in order to be a good football team. This year feels like it's a little bit different. And so we'll kind of see what happens. He does, you know, if there's been some guys that have created some separation, he's not afraid to say their names. So that's one thing we appreciate. You know, there are times when I feel like you hear coaches and you say, you know, who's standing out in the wide receiver room? And then you get a list of 9 guys.
Right.
He might tell you 2 or 3 different guys, but he'll tell you what each one's good at. So you can kind of say, okay, maybe this guy's your deep threat. Maybe this guy's your slot receiver, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that's fair that you have to try to decipher. And the other hard thing, Jim, is, and I remember this from 2024, when you go to camp, Purdue was picked to finish last. And there were a lot of reports. I wasn't at camp that year, but there were a lot of reports like, Purdue's not going to finish last. They got some guys on this team. Well, they finished 1-11. And I think it's just hard to tell because I think individual performances can stand out in fall camp, but how does that, you know, unit look as a team, and how much, you know, how's that defensive star look against a really bad offense or vice versa, you know? So it's always hard to judge. You don't really know until you get to your first probably power conference opponent of the season. So like for Purdue's instance, we won't know what this team can do until September 12th when they play Wake Forest.
Well, we saw last year at Penn State, there were high expectations, you know, preseason polls, they were a top 5 team or even higher. They had all the players returning, all the makings of a great team. And we all know how it turned out, but it was funny. It reminded me when you said about, you might not know until you hit a conference opponent what you really have. What's interesting is Penn State's out-of-conference schedule a year ago was Cupcake City all the way around. And they would win by 35 points. They should have been winning by 45, you know. There were just those little things. And it's like, hey, not to worry, not to worry. Everything's fine. How could you question us when we're winning by 35 points? Well, reality slapped everyone around a little bit. And we realized those little things, they were actually the reality.
Yeah, maybe we should have figured that out earlier, because as we know, James Franklin was not one to lighten up on the scoreboard. So right. If he could have scored 65 points in a game, he would have.
Well, that's the other thing I said about you have to interpret them in the press conference, what they say. It'll be interesting once more Penn State has a cupcake out of conference schedule. And, you know, you'll see a point spread, and it's like, we don't know yet how Matt Campbell will do. Always knew James Franklin, he'd go for that extra touchdown. I swear he knew what the point spread was and wanted to beat it.
I'm sure he did, yeah. There were some – and I always understood his point. I understand that coaches and other players got upset with it, but – the one thing that I'll give James Franklin credit for was always the, you know, it wasn't like he would keep, you know, if it's a 40-point game, he wasn't keeping Drew Aller in there to throw touchdown passes, right? It was, hey, if the 4-string guy gets in there, I want him to be able to play football. And I always did appreciate that. Like, yeah, the kids shouldn't just have to go in, hand the ball off 3 or 4 times or take, you know, a couple knees, whatever. And I did appreciate that. But I can also understand why coaches were like, you can't just – you have to score that, you know, 10th touchdown of the day.
Right. Yes, which I'm going to use that. I appreciate it. I'm going to use that as my segue, Dustin, to our topic for the day. James Franklin did not make friends by doing that. That would appear to be piling on late in the game. And I read a great article, or at least I thought it was, last week. A national article, it talked about the villains of college football. And I thought it was fascinating. And I think an important part of the game is to have villains, teams to root for. You turn on their game because you want to root against them. So I think it's an important part of the game. So I want to talk to you about that. We'll go over the names that were on the list. But I first want to ask you, Dustin, define for me what makes a villain, a good villain, in college football, and I guess across any sport.
Okay, so I think that this is going to be, I don't know, it probably doesn't matter if it's different or not, but is this for individual teams or is it just across college football? As in,
yes.
It's both. Okay.
Player, coaches, teams, anything. Okay.
I think a good villain is like if you get that really, from a coach's perspective, if you get the super arrogant type of coach, and I'm thinking Lane Kiffin when I think about this, like just a guy who you can't trust at all, but he also wins at a pretty high level. So it's not like he's doing all this stuff and goes 5-7, right? Like they've had some good teams at Ole Miss. He did a good job at FAU. I know he had some struggles in the past at USC, but if LSU's up and running, you know, to me, so somebody who is you want to beat, but you can't, kind of carries that big stick, says whatever he wants. Somebody who runs up the score. I'm trying to think about a player. I want to say Shedeur Sanders was a good type of villain, like just really cocky and again arrogant and played pretty well, but he also wasn't like elite. So
he had the attitude of an elite.
Yeah, correct. It was like he had his attitude and thought he had Joe Burrow's talent and was not even close to that, right? So I think that there's a level of that to it too, where I don't know if he's a great villain, but I think fans appreciate when somebody embraces the villain role and then they get beat, especially if it's a player. So I don't know. There's probably a couple different ways to define villain. And then finally, Greg Sankey. How about that?
You know, what I like here is we are just in the intro part of this topic. And I was going to ask you if you could name the folks that are on this list that I have. You already named two of them.
Okay. Oh boy, okay.
With Lane Kiffin, he was number one with a star, okay? And I think you hit some of it. You win games, but there's an arrogance that goes with that, you know, a better than thou kind of attitude, like you're supposed to win. That's the way the world exists. Like in baseball, you and I are both baseball fans. Who's the team in baseball that you hate the most?
The Dodgers.
Now the Dodgers have become the evil empire. The Yankees always were.
Yeah.
Now it's the Dodgers. They're so easy to root against. They spend the most money, and you know there's an arrogance there. We're going to come back, and we're going to name not the ones on this list, but our own villains when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider. Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. And we're talking villains in college football. We're kind of defining what we mean by villain. And I was trying to think of how you define that villain, what makes them. You brought up a couple good points. It's the ones who win, but they're arrogant while doing it. I'm going to throw something else in, and it's familiarity. You know, it's that team you know well.
Yeah.
And but it leads to the question of that's also a rival. What's the difference between a rival and a villain?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I mean, the rival part of it is that's just the team that you hate, and it doesn't really matter who's on the other sideline. Doesn't matter who the coach. I think that there are times when there were probably times when, you know, Penn State never liked Pitt, right? Like those two
Correct.
Teams never get along. But there's probably been, like when Paul Chryst was the coach at Pitt, you probably hated him less. But now that Pat Narduzzi is there, there's more of a reason to hate Pitt, right? Like, he says whatever he wants. He's got that arrogance, that kind of stuff that we were talking about earlier. And it probably is really irritating, too, because he's not – like, he doesn't back it up. And, like, he has had some good seasons, but has he – what's his record against Penn State? Is it like 1-3 or something?
Yeah. Yes, there was a four-game series where they did win one game. His arrogance is unwarranted.
That's correct, yes. Especially maybe not in the – I mean, maybe to a degree he can talk in the ACC, but like when it comes to Penn State, no. So that would be even more frustrating. It's like your little brother – I don't even mean this as the joke, but it's like your little brother that just keeps, you know, poking the bear. You can backhand him, and then he cries to mom, and then he comes back and starts poking you again.
Yes,
that's what that kind of reminds me of. But like to me, I'm trying to think if there's a good example in the. Okay, so here would be a good example, and I'd be curious to know if this guy's on the list too. Now that I bring it up, Jim Harbaugh. I think they became the villain because of everything that unfolded. So everybody in the country wanted to beat Michigan because of the cheating scandal, right? Like, they were good, but then you find out, hey, these guys are actually not playing by the rules. And then, so that becomes a villain. Like, I remember Purdue fans really wanted, let me rephrase this. Purdue fans really wanted to cover the spread against Michigan. Because I think up to that game, Michigan had covered the spread in every game. And in 2023, Purdue knew it wasn't as good as Michigan. So the goal was like, hey, let's cover the spread, be the first team to do that. I mean, the team wanted to win. But generally speaking, would Purdue like to beat Michigan? Yeah, but do you view it as a rival? No. Do you really they're expected to win. So are you heartbroken if they lose? No. So that to me is the difference. Like, there's something that happens that – it makes everybody hate you. And I feel like Michigan and Jim Harbaugh probably are the most recent example of that.
That's good. And it's interesting, by the way, in making up my list, my personal list, you hit on a couple of them already by mentioning Pat Narduzzi. And you said Jim Harbaugh. I put down Michigan. Okay. Same thing. You know, that's what made me hate. And you also bring up, and it's kind of easy for me as a Mets fan to point out the, you know, there's rivals and then the villains. And it's like oftentimes there's a moment where the villain did something to earn that. Like, Mets fans hate the Phillies, huge rivalry. But Chase Utley, a dirty play, takes out the Mets shortstop, breaks his leg. Okay, Chase Utley goes from rival to villain. Mm-hmm. Roger Clemens throws a bat, you know, at a Met player, you know. That turns him into a villain, you know, not just a rival. So, to me, that's kind of the difference between the rival and the villain.
I would also add to that, and I don't know if this is going to make sense, but I think a good sign of you're a villain is if everybody's rooting for the underdog. So, and I'm thinking about the Yankees and the Red Sox back in the early 2000s, right? Like, Boston and New York were consistently in the playoffs. I don't know how many times they actually played. It seemed like they played in the playoffs every year, but I know that wasn't the case. But there were two or three times, and it felt like the whole world was pulling for Boston, you know, the quote-unquote plucky underdog that hadn't been to the World Series in 60 years, and they kept getting beat by the Yankees. Everybody in the world wanted to see the Red Sox beat the Yankees. And they're like, Blue Jays fans don't care. I mean, I know they're in the same division, but Colorado Rockies fans don't care about the Yankees. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, are you also rooting for the underdog consistently? And I know part of that is just sports. Like, people like the underdog to beat the heavy hitters. But I feel like there's also a little bit of a level to, like, Alabama. I don't – probably more of a villain under Nick Saban than they are currently, but – everybody's always rooting for somebody to beat Alabama or, you know, one of those top-tier SEC schools.
Right, and because Alabama's not the big, bad Alabama that they were, you look at them a little bit different. So let's go back to the list. And what team has historically had that kind of arrogance that they were special in the history of college football? I would think this would hit home for you.
Yeah, I had two that immediately came to mind. One is Notre Dame, and two is Michigan.
Okay. Notre Dame is on the list, and Notre Dame has always set themselves apart from everybody else. They're unique, they're an independent. But what makes me think of them as a villain is now and over these last several years where they're above having to be in a conference. But when you start to see here's the meeting of all the important people, all the commissioners of every conference, and the Notre Dame AD.
Yeah.
Now they've literally changed the rules for the college football playoffs to accommodate Notre Dame. They are being treated differently than other teams. So if they're, you know, in the top 12, any other team could get bumped out of the playoffs because, well, this conference winner or the group of five team, they'll bump someone out. If Notre Dame's in the top 12, they can't be bumped out like every other team in the country.
Imagine if any other sport did that. Like, imagine if the Dallas Cowboys said, like, we don't think that this is fair. If we get 10 wins, we're automatically in the playoffs. It's a ridiculous just thing that that they've agreed to allow Notre Dame in the playoffs if they rank in the top 12. And I'm not going to detract too much from this because I know this we have a fun thing we're doing. But
all right. Go ahead.
They play such a patsy schedule that, of course, they're going to probably win 10 games and they're probably going to be ranked in the top 12 or at least close to it. So it's extra annoying. Like, they should have to, I don't know, they should, if they're going to do that, then put a stipulation where you have to play, 10 power conference opponents or something along those lines.
And the committee has said, we are going to accommodate the strength of schedule as part of our criteria. We're going to make that more so now. Strength of schedule. Oh, except for Notre Dame, which will accommodate them. It's ridiculous. And by the way, I did want to mention, you said, you know, being facetious, oh, Dallas, if they win 10 games, they should automatically be in the playoffs. Do not let Jerry Jones hear you say that.
Oh, boy. Well, do you think this show reaches Jerry Jones?
If it would accommodate the Cowboys, someone's probably, hey, Jerry, you see this?
Yeah, they got ears all over the place.
Yeah, if it would help the Cowboys, they would go along with it. So, yeah, I think the villain, often no one is calling Purdue football a villain now.
Right.
You usually have to be a good team and then do something stupid or silly or arrogant, you know, to bring that on. All right. I want to go through this list, but I want to kind of make you guess them.
I want to interrupt you just real quick. Yeah. Another good example of the villain, and this one will strike home for you. I don't remember the year, but when Miami played Penn State and came off the plane in the fatigues.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I understand that Miami was already kind of a villain because they were so good and they had that arrogance, but them to do that then, and then they got beat. Like, everybody in the world was probably rooting for Penn State.
Oh, yeah. It was the good versus evil of that game, which it was presented that way. It was sold that way. And you mentioned something earlier about teams willing to play the villain. And Miami did play the villain very well. They played the role. They also, I think, they walked out of, there was in those bowl games, you know, that have the meals with both teams together. Miami walked out of one of those. And one of their players said something to the effect of, did the Japanese sit down with the Americans before Pearl Harbor or, you know, something to that effect. And of course, one of the Penn State players was, well, did they end up losing?
That's so, pretty good. I did not know that story.
There was, again, there was Miami playing the role. And what was funny in that game, see, now you mentioned one thing, and I have to take it even further, is during that game, Vinny Testaverde was intercepted about 23 times in that game. And it was Penn State sitting back in a zone, tempting them to throw the ball against them. And Miami would not adjust how they play. It was kind of like, this is what we do, you know, and this is how we're going to beat you. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Anyway, any chance it is to talk about that game. We're coming up against the break, but we had the villain of a team being Notre Dame. How about another coach close to home for you?
Kurt Cignetti?
Yes. Yes. And does he deserve to be on the list?
That's a great question. I could see it going either way. In my opinion, yes, but you know I'm a little bit one-sided on this. So I understand why if people don't think so, then I totally get that too.
Well, you do have a little bit of a biased take, but when we come back, I suspect you've heard this story, but there's a Cignetti story I want to tell when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. We are talking about villains in college football. And when we left, it was, I think, very interesting. You guessed Kurt Cignetti is on this list that I read a national article about the different villains in college football. So Kurt Cignetti, and you said, and I think this was very telling, that Cignetti, you have a bit of a bias against Indiana, so having him on your list, but you'd understand if other people don't. Well, I think until recently, I kind of liked Kurt Cignetti. I like the Google me, I win, you know, because he backed it up. Give him credit for that. But recently, I feel like he crossed the line, as far as I'm concerned, where apparently Indiana canceled a game with Notre Dame, like a two-game series. And he suggested, well, yeah, would, and again, this is Indiana, who plays nobody in their out-of-conference schedule, which doesn't make them unique. Penn State's guilty also. But he said, well, maybe we'd play Notre Dame if they play us twice here and once at Notre Dame. Come on, Kurt. Where does that come from? And you know Notre Dame will never accept that. So it's very easy to say, hey, I said we'd play them. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense because, you know, now the Indiana Notre Dame fans don't have to choose what uniform they're going to wear to that game. So that's number one. I think, legitimately, if Kurt Cignetti was at any other school other than Indiana, he would be considered a villain. And maybe not any other school, but if he went to Penn State, Alabama, Florida State, you know, one of those big time programs, even I would say probably pretty much anywhere in the SEC, he would be like, it's just the fact that he did it at Indiana and nobody considers Indiana football, and the fact that he won a national championship backed it up. But I do think that you're correct. Like if he's not on your list now, his arrogance is only going to get bigger, and so is only going to grow, and so he will be on the list. But he's one of those figures that, like, he probably wasn't seen much as a villain outside of the SEC. I think the SEC hated him from the start, but outside of that, wasn't seen as a villain until probably, well, I mean, yes, the Notre Dame comments, it's like, you're the one that canceled the series. So what, just say you don't want to, I would hate it much less if he would just say, it doesn't help us to play them. So why would we?
Right. Right. What you're talking about is being honest. Instead of, you know, trying to, does he actually think people are going to hear that and side with him? And maybe he doesn't care. It does, and it really doesn't matter, I guess. But it certainly makes this underdog story for Indiana. It takes quite the edge off of it. So for me, that's the tipping point on my opinion on Kurt Cignetti. So yeah. Now, do you have any more guesses on who's on this national list?
Okay, so how many are there?
There's a few more. Well, I'll give you one. You know, you mentioned Greg Sankey. They made it a tag team, Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey.
Okay. Sure.
Which I think is fair. We're both a bit of Big Ten homers, but still, I think, you know, Petitti is there. We got Lane Kiffin and Kurt Cignetti. There's one more coach and one more team and one player. Now, I don't know if you'll get any of these, so I'll help you out a bit.
Well, hold on. Let me guess the player.
Okay.
Because this is the only one that comes to mind, and I may be way off here. Brian Bosworth?
No, it's a current player.
Oh, current player. Oh, okay.
And a quarterback.
A current player and a quarterback. I feel like I'm going to be really upset when I don't get this correct. Shoot. Boy, go ahead and tell me that way.
Okay, I thought it was pretty bogus. Who's the most famous quarterback in college football?
Brendan Sorsby?
No, I said current Arch Manning.
No. That's terrible.
I told you, I don't think it's legit. Even the explanation was bad. It was kind of like they're dinging him because of his name, which I don't think is fair. One of them is a school, and it names one of the huge benefactor at that school.
The benefactor.
A newly nouveau riche team, newly rich and competitive.
Boy, I'm drawing a blank here too. Newly rich and competitive. Man, you're gonna have to tell me that one too.
Texas Tech.
Okay.
Yeah, along with Cody Campbell.
Okay. Yep. These all make sense.
That one I think is legitimate because it's, you know, like Cody Campbell is testifying before Congress, and it's like, who the hell is he? You know,
right?
That his word. And the other one, I'm going to give you this one. It's a coach because I don't think you would ever get this one because it's a little bit different. It's not someone who's winning. Bill Belichick. And he really doesn't fit the mold, you know, that winner who's arrogant. He did. He used to fit that mold in the NFL. But I get it. I would still put him in there, too. If I were in the ACC, boy, I would love beating him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's pretty easy to be a villain when you're 70 and you're dating a 26-year-old. Right? Like, that's got to be, like, of the villainous things you can do, that's got to be top three.
And her personality does not help his cause at all,
no,
does it?
No, she might be the bigger villain in college football. Now, in football general, Bill Belichick, but in college, her.
Yes. She could be, she's part of the equation at the very least. And it's going to be let me just ask you the question in general. How do you think he's going to do this year?
I don't know enough about North Carolina. I feel like they'll probably be around bowl eligible, maybe. I feel like they were better last year than they – is this his third year, I think? Or is it just
– I don't even know. I was ready to say his second year.
It may be his second year. I don't know. I really don't. I feel like as the season went on, like, they weren't good, but that first game that they played – I don't even remember who they played – but they got the doors blown off of them. Yeah. And then but I think they kind of settled down after that. I would say, let's say 5 wins. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, and this kind of ties into his buddy Nick Saban, who retired. And I think he retired rather than deal with everything that comes with the portal and NIL. And I think that it's now a different game because of that. The way the game was prior and the rules were prior, Nick Saban knew he was the best. He had the best program, the best able to recruit and all. And all of a sudden, it's a different sport. It's a different game entirely. And he said, you know what? I'd rather just ride off into the sunset. Good for him is my take. Bill Belichick going from the NFL to college. I mean, this great coach in the NFL, I don't think there's a coach in the NFL that I would say, hey, he'd be guaranteed to be a great coach in college. Pick a guy. Is there a guy in the NFL that you'd say, you know, he would be stellar if he went to the college game? I really don't think that's the case. I think they're two completely different sports.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that happen time and time again where one – tries to jump to another league and it doesn't work out. Very rarely does it work. Jim Harbaugh is probably the only example that's been successful in both levels that I can think of off the top of my head. Maybe there's somebody else, but it is. It's two completely different games and it's two completely different management styles. And it just shows the difference between like grown men and you're still dealing with kids at the college level and how you coach those guys and what's successful.
Exactly. And it's so much more important what's the program that you're going to. I suspect if Bill Belichick went to Georgia, he would have been a lot more successful. And, you know, that's the variable, you know, that you deal with. So that's part of the equation. And now, you know, going forward here, what I think we hit everyone, Lane Kiffin, Kurt Cignetti, Notre Dame, Greg Sankey, but Tony Petitti was on that list also. I think you have to put those two guys in and what they are, I'll say it this way, what they are doing to the game.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to make it basically a two-conference sport. And you totally understand their perspective because their job is to make money for their conferences. And those are the conferences that are doing the best. They have the best teams. They have the biggest brands. Best names, the most, advertising dollars. They're doing the best in the college football playoff, but it is taking away, like, and not just, I hate to say just them because it's really just conference realignment. Like, that should be a villain in college football because you've taken the regionality out of it. You've taken, it doesn't mean anything to win the Big Ten anymore. It used to, but now it doesn't. So, there's a lot wrong, but those two guys have been pounding the drum to just, for, you know, they've made college football turned it from a weekly sport into the only thing anybody seems to care about is the playoff and how big this field is and what the strength of schedule is.
They have. And I think what they've done is the Southeast Conference completely defanged the Big 12 by taking Oklahoma and Texas, the two best programs. And then the Big 10 did the same thing to the Pac-12 Conference by – you know, Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, they actually totally destroyed that conference. So if for that alone, I would make those two guys villains. All right. We talked about this article, somebody else's thoughts about villains. When we come back, Dustin, I want to hear your list of villains. We'll do that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number four of our show. We are talking about villains in college football. So, Dustin, we talked about this national article. I plagiarized, you know, this idea. I thought it was interesting and fun. And they had some names that are familiar. And I think we could all agree on Lane Kiffin and Kurt Cignetti, Notre Dame, Texas Tech and Cody Campbell, Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey, commissioners of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. Well, now I want to get a little closer to home. Get a little personal here. Let's talk about Dustin Schutte's villains. You're a Purdue guy, so you get Kurt Cignetti in there already. You kind of get Notre Dame in there already. Who are your other villains in the sport?
So these aren't going to be – these may not be active. So I'm going to hit – because I'm going to go back to, like, who did I hate when I was a kid?
Okay.
Because some of this is – so covering the Big Ten as a whole has kind of softened me to some of this a little bit, at least to a degree. I'm going to tell you one villain that I had growing up, Jim, and you're not going to like it.
Go ahead. Do it.
It was Penn State.
And no.
I did have a reason for this. So Drew Brees had an incredible career at Purdue, led him to the Big Ten championship. The only team in the Big Ten he did not beat was Penn State. And they had, I think one of the games Penn State won like 30-13, but I think there was another one that was like 23-21 and another one that they won by 4 or 5 points. Like they were 2-1 possession games that Purdue both should have won both. And I always wanted to see Drew Brees beat every team in the conference. And he did that to everybody except Penn State. So that was one growing up for no fault of their own. I don't remember any players or I don't remember disliking them for any other reason other than the fact that I wanted him to win one of those games and he just didn't. So that was one growing up.
That's legitimate. You know, to right now, you know, Penn State fans hate Ohio State mostly because they can't beat them.
Sure. Yeah, that's that makes total sense. Another one, and this is late 2000s, Notre Dame quarterback Jimmy Clausen.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the arrogance and the guy that you just want to beat all the time. He was a 4-time state champion quarterback. Yep, had the rings. Yep, you remember. And had some good teams at Notre Dame, but they were never really in contention. So that was a big villain. I would say you could probably put Urban Meyer on that list. Not just for what he did at Ohio, for Michigan fans for certain he's the biggest villain. But not just because of Ohio State, but you think back to the Florida days and just not the fact that they were so good, but the fact that they there was a lot of things that got overlooked very clearly when he was, things of illegal activity and such. So those are a couple that I can think of off the top of my head. I wasn't obviously a kid for all of those, but those are the ones that immediately come to mind. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that I just disliked. I know in Purdue circles, one guy, even though there was an appreciation for him, Antoine Randall L., quarterback in Indiana. When you think about that stupid logo that they had, the oval with the IU, they were trying to separate their brands between football and basketball. Why you would do that, I don't know, because back then Indiana football was terrible. But he was really good. He was hard to tackle.
He was phenomenal.
He was outstanding. So, you know, watching him play, but he wasn't, I don't remember him being arrogant. I just think he was super good and hard to bring down. So he was one that, you know, Purdue fans didn't really like. Outside of that, man, I'm trying to think if there's any others that even on a national scale, I guess, boy, I just keep coming up with ones like Pete Carroll, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, and those USC teams probably are up there. Do you have some others in mind? Because I can probably, if I keep talking, I'm going to keep thinking of names, and I don't want to take over this entire fourth quarter.
No, it's okay. I'm maybe a little more current, because if I went through my history, it's longer than yours, okay?
Sure.
I mean, I could go back. I could tie Richard Nixon into villain at college football. In 1969, Arkansas played Texas in last game of the regular season. He attended the game and awarded the winner the national championship trophy. Meanwhile, Penn State was undefeated and wasn't part of the conversation. One of the famous quotes from Joe Paterno was, "How could he know so much about college football and so little about Watergate?"
I like that. That's good.
But I'm not going to go back in history like that after I just did. More current, I want to mention, you brought up the name Pat Narduzzi. Now, he's the definition of the difference between villain and rival. In my mind, he's a villain. Pitt is a rival. Narduzzi's the villain for just his ability to say stupid things. In fact, he's so good at saying such stupid things that it's almost hard to look at him as a villain. It's almost like comic relief character.
Like Elmer Fudd or something.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what I will do is, here's one I will throw in for you, is Petitti and Sankey, the league commissioners, but they're really just the tool of the networks.
Yeah,
ESPN and Fox, I look at them, and especially ESPN, because they've been doing it for longer. They're more predominant. And just over and over again, you talk about the overdog, the arrogance, everything with ESPN just reeks. And, you know, my most recent one, and I know I've shared this on the show, when they got the first interview with James Franklin, and did not ask him one legitimate question, and defended him to the hilt, because every single guy on there on the panel has the same agent as James Franklin.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, for no one to say, "Hey, but wait a minute, James, you were like the first coach in history to lose two in a row as an over 20-point favorite. You know, what happened? How about at least pretending to be a journalist?" So I'm going to put ESPN out there.
I think that's a good one. I think the networks is a really good one, because they are the driving force behind a lot of this division. And that makes sense. I like that poll. That's a good poll.
And to not let Fox off the hook, again, this is a little bit of a homer bias point of view for me as a Penn Stater. The whiteout is such a special game as a night game, and they can't accommodate that. After 1,000 years of accommodating Michigan and Ohio State, who had to play at noon, and ESPN would accommodate them, everyone in the world, Ohio State and Michigan said we have to be at noon. Well, how about just one game a year and accommodate Penn State, because this is so unique in college football itself.
Right. It's the one game that I think everybody in college football looks forward to. I mean, I'm sure there's others that everybody looks forward to, the Michigan, Ohio State. People look forward to LSU, Alabama. But this is, I should maybe put it in a category. Maybe this is one of 10 games that everybody looks forward to because it's usually a good opponent. It's a cool atmosphere. Everybody wants to, everybody I've talked to said they want to go to see the whiteout at some point. So, yeah, you would think that not only would you accommodate that, but that would be a big time, get a lot of eyeballs on that game if you kept it at night.
And make it work. You know, if Fox can't do it because of their schedule, because they're the noon game, the big noon game, well, you know, NBC is part. CBS yeah. gets the late afternoon game. NBC gets the night game. Hey, how about accommodating it and just saying, hey, look, we can't do it at night. Let's make sure NBC gets that game. Maybe there has to be some kind of other trade, some other – but make it work, you know? Yeah. It doesn't seem that difficult. So that's why I would put Fox in the same vein. I'm going to go one more, and this is maybe local to Penn State, but James Franklin and Virginia Tech have become a villain around here.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
And it's the Virginia Tech fans, if you see it on social media, they've been awful. They're doing victory laps right now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. From getting James Franklin as coach. And there's one story that's fairly current that I think says everything about Matt Campbell and James Franklin. Virginia Tech traditionally has not had the facilities that Penn State has. James Franklin doesn't like his office down there. Apparently, they spent $200,000 to accommodate him.
Oof.
Meanwhile, the story at Penn State, James Franklin had a huge office, so big that Matt Campbell said, you know what? I don't need all that space, and we don't have enough meeting room space. They cut the office in half to create more meeting room space for special teams. Okay? Now, I cannot think of another story that defines the two men better than that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good indication of what both schools now have, and especially Matt Campbell coming from Iowa State. Yeah, I'm sure that it was probably similar to the Virginia Tech situation in terms of office space, right? So, yeah, that's interesting. I did not hear that story.
And it talks about the personality and how they present themselves. And, oh, and the Virginia Tech fans are, you know, it's the little war on Twitter seeing, you know, fans from each school. And yeah. The Penn State fans simply sitting back and saying, just wait. Just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see what it's about. My very last one is anyone in the SEC who says they've got the best conference in the country by far.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. Yep. Anybody who says they have the best conference now, like, that's pretty clear that you don't. And you just keep pushing different narratives to try to establish yourself as the top conference. But right now, that's not happening. It's pretty clear that the Big Ten is, and I don't know. Maybe we'll see Oregon win a national championship this year. It'll be four straight years for the Big Ten and four different programs. Could you imagine that, Jim?
Or it could be Purdue or Penn State. That'll be the last word, Dustin. Thank you. Thank all of you for joining us. Come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider. Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.